Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Let's transition right into Greg McElroy. How about that? From ESPN and SEC Network, former quarterback. Greg, how you doing?
What's going on, guys? How are y'all?
Oh, we just let people vent a little bit on Fridays. We call it You Just Made the List. Something or someone who's made you mad, and just, you know, it's just a release to make you feel better. Has anything made you mad this week that you would like to get off your chest?
COVID has made me mad from the beginning, you know. Our whole world's upside down, so like that's on the list every week. But if you're looking for like creativity, I don't really have anything right now. I'm in a pretty good place, pretty good mental space.
Okay,
heading into week 7 of the college football season.
Yeah, we don't want you to force it. Okay, so you brought up COVID, so let's just start there. Something we've been talking about the last couple of days. How do you think this is going to play out at the school you know very well in Alabama? Nick Saban, are they going to actually play this game without him? Is he going to be there? Are they going to let him do things remotely? How do you think this is going to play out the next, I don't know, what are we, about 36 hours away from that game, somewhere in that ballpark?
Well, I know right now he is in the process of trying to put together negative tests. He has been asymptomatic, which is relatively rare for someone in his age range, not super rare, but like relatively rare compared to someone that's say in their 30s or their 20s, asymptomatic is actually quite common. But with someone that's in their upper 60s, not quite as common. So they do think that there is a strong possibility that was a false positive. So I do believe that they are trying as hard as they can to get additional testing. Because if you have 3 negative tests after a positive test, you are cleared. So he tested yesterday. I know he's testing again today. I'm sure he'll test again tomorrow to try to be cleared. But even if he isn't, I don't think it's the end of the world. I think people have made a lot of a real big deal out of the fact that he won't be on the sideline, but he's not a coordinator. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but people have said, well, I mean, this is significant. Well, I actually think it'd be a bigger deal if Steve Sarkisian tested positive and couldn't call plays, because he's doing such a great job on offense right now, calling plays and putting their offense in a great spot, that I feel like his absence would be felt more on game day than Nick Saban's would be. Now, Saban's still been involved in practice. He's still been involved in meetings, but he can't be involved on game day. And I think just given his role on game day, I don't think it's the end of the world for Alabama if he can't go.
Why do we've been trying to figure out on this show? Maybe you can come up with a better answer. Well, we don't even have an answer, really. Why is it that, you know, we're doing everything else remotely, as you know? I mean, we got broadcasters calling games from their homes. We're doing press conferences from our homes, virtually, remotely, however you want to describe it. Why can't we have a coach's team remotely?
I just don't think that's a precedent we want to set. Because
is there an advantage?
There's a perceived advantage because you have access to technology. You know, do you want to open up Pandora's box and allowing guys having iPads on the sideline? Probably not. Like, I don't think that does anyone any good. Now, everyone said, well, Hugh Freeze coached it from a bed in the stadium last year with a headset on. Yeah, but that was because he was recovering from surgery. He wasn't contagious. So it's not necessarily an apples-to-apples comparison. So I think that anytime you open up Pandora's box and the possibility of bringing technology into your game day operations, that opens up the possibility of teams taking advantage of it and using it as a loophole. And I just don't think that's a practice we want to go down. Because, look, if there's one thing we know about college and college coaches more specifically, you know, they will cut corners in order to win. Their jobs and their livelihoods depend on it. So if guys are taping other guys' signals and relaying information via an iPad, that's not something we want. If it could be properly regulated, that'd be one thing. But I don't know at this point how they'd be able to do that in a short period of time.
While you didn't play on the defensive side of the ball, you went up against defenses in your playing career, so you know what they look like and what they're supposed to look like. Why do you think right now defense in the SEC, let's just talk about the SEC right now, why is defense incredibly down? It looks like outside of Georgia, teams are really struggling to play good defense.
Well, there's a bunch of reasons. One, offenses have never been more advanced, and right now the RPO has basically made it impossible to be right on defense. So if you have a quarterback that's making good sound decisions, is accurate with football, and can run, you literally can never be wrong, because every play is designed to have an answer. So that's part of the issue, is just great offense is going to be great defense. That's just the way it is. Other reasons, I think conditioning is a major factor right now. Guys did not have a normal offseason for conditioning. So tempo offenses are absolutely killing the defenses. Like Alabama last week, who obviously has a ton of depth, and they had guys with their hands on their hips the entire third and fourth quarter against Ole Miss. They had no answers. I mean, they were exhausted. So fatigue is a massive issue. And I also think, too, man, I mean, those guys that are tweeners, say 10 years ago, let's use a guy like Kyle Pitts at Florida, for example, who's playing tight end. 10 years ago, that guy's playing defensive end, he's rushing the passer. Now he's playing tight end. So, like, the tweener guys that could play offense or defense, because of how many guys are coaching in college football, the offense side of the football, they're now picking those guys that could go either way, and they're putting them on offense because the dynamic playmaker is what best is going to allow their offense to score points, which is going to make them exciting, which is going to make them as coaches less expendable. So I think those are three reasons. I mean, amongst many others, difficulty practicing, difficulty tackling, you know, not being real comfortable in getting as many reps as you normally would because of contact tracing, et cetera. So there's a ton of COVID factors that have played a part, but there's also some other factors that have kind of been trending to this for quite a while now.
We're talking to Greg McElroy, great insight, ESPN college football analyst. So, Greg, that's a really – you got me thinking with your answer there. And so I'm wondering, when people start asking the question, where does this put the SEC? You don't always see not as much of the shootouts that we've been seeing. And the lead dogs, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, all going in as top five, top ten teams, they all look very vulnerable. LSU has dropped a notch. Is it just the state of the game, or is the SEC down a notch? It's all relative, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, they're down relative to what we've seen maybe in at other times. I still think you have probably five elite teams in the SEC right now. Like, that might sound crazy. I think there's five really good teams. And A&M is one of them. Florida is one of them. Alabama, Georgia, obviously. And then probably a wild card, depending on the day, it could be Tennessee. You know, I think that's a real possibility. I mean, it's amazing to me. But we've seen it everywhere. Like, the Big 12's a disaster right now with what's going on at the top of their league. And the team that I still have a lot of faith in, Oklahoma State, I don't know if they can beat Oklahoma. I mean, I'm not convinced of that. I'm kind of in see it to believe it mode, but Oklahoma's been a shell of themselves. The Big Ten, we don't know yet. You know, we'll see what happens when they come back a week from now. And I think the ACC right now is as strong as it's been in quite a while, because Miami feels like they're trending in the right direction. North Carolina's the real deal. Notre Dame is obviously in the ACC this year. I think they're playing good football. So I think every league, there's not really that transcendent outside of Clemson right now, who had so many guys return from last year and have had guys playing for a long time in very pivotal roles. Everyone's kind of a crapshoot right now, and that's kind of fun. But also, as a fan of a team that's traditionally great, it's stressful and unsettling. So, I mean, as good as you felt being a Georgia fan coming into the year, as good as you felt about being an Alabama fan coming into the year, all that stuff, like, you still don't really know what you're going to get from your team week in, week out. You think you know, and you hope you know, but ultimately you don't. So it's kind of a fun year because I think there will be a lot of surprises in the next 7 weeks as we start to kind of wind into the gauntlet part of the schedule.
Give us your assessment of Stetson Bennett at this point. He's an interesting story. I think we all like to root for the guy that really had to wait his turn. There were a lot of other options brought in. He's hung in there. He's got his shot so far. He's made the most of it. Do you think he'll stick?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't given him any reason to not be the guy. Like, I feel like everyone keeps trying to replace this kid, but he's doing everything they asked of him. You know, he's not turning the ball over. I think he's hit. He only has to make 4 or 5 throws a game because of how well they run the football and how few times they really ask him to put the ball in the tight spot. I think he'll have to play his best game tomorrow to get a victory, but I have full faith that he can pull that off and get it done. So I'm like trying to really understand like what else do people need to see from him, because I did a radio show earlier this week that is this week we see JT Daniels. I'm like, what the heck? Why are we replacing this kid? He's been the savior the last 10 quarters of football for Georgia after what was an abysmal first 30 minutes against Arkansas. He's been the one guy that's been very consistent and steady. So I think he's all you need. I think you can win with him for sure. There's no denying that there will come a time, and it might be tomorrow. If they're going to win a national championship, their quarterback's got to carry them probably 2 or 3 games. That's just the way it happens every year. And is he going to be able to elevate his level of play to a point in which he can carry that team? And that's, I think, at this moment, to be determined. So I'm hopeful and optimistic for him. But I also know, hey, I mean, until he goes out there and does it, it's still a little bit of an unknown. So I thought he's hung in there. He's weathered the storm. Last week was not perfect, but he got through it. I thought he did a really nice job against Auburn, especially in the second half of that football game, being smart with the football. So I've been encouraged by what I see, and I'm a little flabbergasted by how many people keep trying to replace this kid. And y'all, by the way, it's not an indictment on y'all. It's everywhere. Danny Cannell, who I did the show with in the morning, tried to replace him yesterday. Like, I was like, Danny, let's relax. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just I'm sensitive to that, you know, being kind of an underdog story myself at quarterback.
We're talking to Greg McElroy from ESPN, and you mentioned Auburn. You have Auburn at South Carolina tomorrow alongside Dave Pasch. So, what exactly are the Auburn Tigers right now at 2-1, and we saw them struggle last week to beat Arkansas. It just seems like they're not quite running on all cylinders yet.
No, they're definitely not. It's so funny. It's like it just further proves that you are what your record says you are, but you're really not. You know what I mean? Because I think a lot of people would bring up the case that Auburn should have lost that game last week, because I don't know about y'all, but I thought Bo Nix spiked it backwards. I mean, that's just me. As being an observer of the game, I thought he spiked it backwards. I thought Arkansas recovered. I thought the referees blew it. But they won the game. It's not their fault. Like, Auburn didn't steal it. They won. They were giving it to them. So they had nothing to apologize for by any stretch. But when you look at Auburn, it feels like they're 0-3. You look at South Carolina, conversely, who they're playing, it feels like they're 3-0. Like, they're on cloud 9 at 1-2. And then you have Auburn, who's super disappointed with their 2-1 start. It's pretty wild just how, you know, the perception of the team can affect how you're kind of evaluating their play. I think they need to find identity on offense. I think Tank Bigsby, their running back, is their best offensive weapon at this moment. He is a superstar in the making, and I think they need to ride him. When Auburn's been at their best, they've had a bell cow runner, whether it be Trey Mason, who is probably the best example, a Kerryon Johnson. And you have a bell cow at running back, they're pretty dang solid. And then if Bo Nix can be a little more accurate with the football, continue to use his legs, and be a little more consistent, I think they have good weapons at wide receiver. I think Seth Williams is an excellent wide receiver, and I really think that Schwartz is a matchup nightmare given his speed. So I think Auburn's got the pieces. It's just the rhythm offensively is not there. And then on the defensive side of the football, they're not as dominant in the trenches as they were a year ago. They're still okay, but last year they had two guys that were absolute glass eaters, and now those guys aren't there anymore, wrecking havoc on opposing offensive line. So I think they're trying to find themselves on that side of the ball just a little bit. But offensively really is where it starts with Auburn. Right now they're just not where they need to be.
You know how this works, and being an analyst or doing sports radio, we play the pretender or contender game so much. With this unique schedule, Notre Dame being a member of the ACC for this year, they're 3-0. They did have one game that was postponed against Wake Forest, but you would probably think they'd be 4-0 after last week's win over Florida State. Are you looking at them as they're a contender, or is the jury still out, or do you just think that they're going to run into Clemson and that's going to take care of them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they did a pretty good job running the football last week. You know, if they can be physical in the run game, which is that's kind of who they are, and they've kind of turned into a little bit of an offensive line factory, and if Ian Book continue to be smart with the football, and they can find a receiver or two that emerges that replaces Chase Claypool's production at wide receiver. They can find that guy, which they haven't really identified him just yet. I think they have the makings of a team that's pretty dangerous. Now, if they played against Alabama, I'd pick Alabama. They played against Georgia, I'd pick Georgia. I think a game between North Carolina and Notre Dame would be remarkably competitive because I think North Carolina is really good. And then if they play Clemson, which they will, I'd pick Clemson to win by double digits. So I think they're really good, but there's a pretty significant gap to me between Clemson and everybody else in the ACC, even though the rankings wouldn't necessarily reflect that.
So how much of what you just said, and not just with Notre Dame, but in general, as the committee tries to figure out what the playoff is going to look like in this wacky year of you may have one conference playing X amount of games and the SEC playing 10 or what have you, how much are they going to look at if they had an outer conference schedule and they played – Alabama, like you said, or whatever, how much are they going to have to factor that in to try and figuring out the four teams in the playoff?
Yeah, I think the people on the committee are hoping that it resolves itself. You know, I mean, I think they're hoping that we have a pretty clear cut and painted picture of, all right, well, this team has one or zero loss since they won the ACC. This team has one or zero loss since they won the SEC. This team has one or zero loss since they won the Big Ten. And then whoever wins the Big 12 or Pac-12 has one or zero losses. Like, I think the committee's begging for that outcome. And given the fact that there's not really an independent candidate this year, because there's not really anyone in the group of five, with all due respect to Cincinnati, I'm not sure they're going to have the juice or the firepower to get it done. BYU's been a great story. They play tonight against Houston. I think they're going to have their hands full with Houston, who's playing only their second game of the year in Week 7, which is pretty remarkable. So I don't think either one of those two teams are really a factor. So I think the committee's hoping that it resolves itself by way of conference championships. But I think that it's one of those years where conference championships are really all you're going to be able to rely on. Like, that's going to be the ultimate indicator of whether or not you get an invitation. And if you don't win your conference, the likelihood of you getting in is probably pretty slim, unless something happens that is unforeseen, like Oklahoma with two losses winning the Big 12. Could open up the door for a one-loss runner-up in the SEC, like a team like Texas A&M, who, if you look at their schedule, they might finish 9-1 because they're going to be favored in every other game the rest of the year. I don't think they will finish 9-1, but they might. I'm just saying they're going to be favored likely in every game from here on out, and they already have Alabama in their rearview mirror. So they might not ever get to the SEC championship game and yet could find a situation where they get to the college football playoff at 9-1. Over, say, a two-loss Big 12 team. So I think the SEC is in a great spot to have at least one in, and if there were to be chaos elsewhere, I think they would be in a possible – there is always a possibility of a second SEC team.
He is Greg McElroy of ESPN. Greg, we appreciate the time as always. Hope you and the family continue to stay safe, and we'll enjoy watching you tomorrow, Auburn at South Carolina.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Thank you. Y'all have a great day. Don't put too many people on the list now.
No, not at all. We're done. We're done with the list for today. Greg McElroy of ESPN will come back, wrap up the third hour of the show next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.